just into it.
So today is the fifth Sunday of Lent, and we are very quickly approaching the end of our Lenten season. Just next week, it'll be Palm Sunday, and we welcome Jesus into Jerusalem with the palms, and everyone sings Hosanna in the highest. And then we enter into Holy Week, the holiest week of the entire year. And then we enter the Easter Triduum, Holy Thursday, Good Friday, Easter Vigil, and of course, Easter Sunday. And so in these last few weeks of Lent, we have Jesus in the Gospel today talking about death. Unless a grain of wheat falls to the ground and dies, it has no life. And of course, we've been hearing about death all of Lent. Are we preparing for the death of Jesus Christ? And what we must recognize is when Jesus was speaking these words, who is he speaking to? He's speaking to these Greeks who want to find him. They're seeking him out. He's also speaking to Philip and Andrew, and most likely the other apostles are there as well. And so the men that he's speaking to literally are going to die for the faith. So he's saying to them, yeah, come and find me, seek me out. I'm going to go die, and so you have to die too. And you have to imagine, at the point when Jesus was being crucified, they must have been so afraid. Like, what? We have to go die? Oh my gosh. And see, this is where the fear creeps in. And we all know that we have many fears, and fear often controls us. So when I was thinking about this fear, what came to my mind was just an event a couple days ago for me. And some of you might know if you saw me last week at Mass or any other time throughout the week, I was wearing glasses because I just got LASIK on Thursday, got LASIK surgery. And prior to the event of going to get LASIK last Thursday, I had like no fear. I wasn't afraid. I had met, or I knew two people in my life who had gotten it, and they said amazing things about it. They said, don't be afraid. It's super easy. It's quick. It's painless, no big deal. And in fact, even last week, I probably met another like 100 people at this parish who kept coming up to me and saying they got it done. And how it was so easy, it was great, best thing they ever did. And so going in, I had no fear. And the day before I get there for the initial exam prior, the lady who greeted me said, we have this piece of paper here. If you want, you can click on this link and you can see what's going to happen in the procedure if you want to know ahead of time. And I said, no, thank you. I do not want to know anything. The less I can know, the better. Okay, no, thank you. And so Thursday comes, and one of my priest friends drove me to the city, downtown Chicago. We got lunch. We go up to the sixth floor of this office building where this doctor performs LASIK surgery every Thursday and Friday. And so around 1:30, I get there and they give me a little pill to help me relax. And I took the pill and I did not feel any different. I don't know if it was a placebo or what, but that pill didn't do anything, okay? And so about 25 minutes later, I go into the pre-op room where we're going to begin everything. And so the gentleman who's like the assistant is explaining, we're going to put this hairnet on you because I'm going to put drops in your eyes. I don't want the drops to get into your ears. I want to protect your ears. So you're going to lay down here. And he says, if you want, maybe you should take your collar off because you'll be laying down the entire time. So I take off my collar. I put it on the chair. And he said, don't worry. We'll take that wherever we go. And he said, now at this point, the doctor's going to come in a few minutes. And he's going to do the first procedure, which is to basically cut open your eye, right, in order to do the surgery. And he said, now just so you know, at this part, you're going to go dark for 30 seconds. And all of a sudden, I looked at him, and I was like, you mean I'm going to be blind for 30 seconds? And he goes, well, you'll go dark for 30 seconds. I said, well, you're using that word again, but you mean I'm going to be blind, right, for 30 seconds? That's what you're actually saying? And he goes, yes, it's going to be dark. You're going to be blind for 30 seconds. And when he said that, all of a sudden, we all know if we've ever had a fear before, which we all do, right? All of a sudden, the whole room felt like warm, and every thought in my brain was going now a million miles an hour, and I'm calculating in my brain, like, do I stay here? I went into fight or flight mode where I thought, oh my gosh, I'm going to be blind for 30 seconds. What if I'm blind longer? Like, what if they do something wrong and I don't ever have vision? And so now I'm thinking, do I stay here? Do I go? Okay, I'm already here. I drove an hour with somebody else and I just paid them a bunch of money. But do I leave? Because I really want to leave. I have so many fears. And I was just freaking out in my brain. All these different things were going on. And I really debated leaving. And so I said to the gentleman, I said, I have to let you know that you just made me very afraid. I'm very nervous and I want to leave. And so you have to talk to me right now. Like, talk. And he said, okay, well, don't worry. He said, I did this a couple of years ago. There's nothing to be afraid of. He said, it's very quick. It won't be permanent, don't worry. He said, the doctor talks the entire time. He counts down from 30, so you know exactly when your vision will come back. There's nothing to be afraid of. He said, the doctor today already did this 20 times, and he's been doing this for years. He's done this procedure thousands of times. No one's ever gone blind. Everyone walks out of here with perfect vision. You've nothing to be afraid of. And as he kept talking, my fear kind of went down and got less and less and less, and I laid down. The doctor came in and he put this mechanism on my eye, and my right eye, yeah, was blind for 30 seconds. And there was actually kind of comfort there because I didn't realize they would do one eye at a time. So I thought, well, if I go blind in this one eye, I have the other one as a backup, just in case. And so I got a little less fearful because of that, honestly. So I was blind for 30 seconds in each eye, and then after that I got up, I could still see, and I walked to the next room, the actual operation room, and I laid down in this chair, and it was all very surreal, because you lay back, they kind of put your head in a mechanism so you can't move it too much, and you're looking at a circle of white, bright white circle light, and in the middle of the circle is a red flashing light. And they say, Father, just look at the light the entire time. And you can't see anybody. All you can see is this light, and then you're just looking forward. You're kind of blocked off. And you're just like hearing these voices around you, the voice of the doctor, the voice of that gentleman, and the voice of the female assistant. And all I'm hearing is voices talking. I hear 7.7, 5.5, 2.7, 3.4. And now he's pokey, I see a hand and he's like poking my eye and he says, Father, can you feel that? And I go, yes, I can. He goes, eye drops. And so a hand comes in and they squirt eye drops into my eye. And then he's poking my eye again. He says, can you still feel that, Father? Yes, I can feel it. More eye drops. And they put more eye drops. And there's like this talking everywhere. And as they're putting in the eye drops, hands are just coming in and voices are talking. And now he's saying, we're going to do this and that. And he goes in and he lifts up this part of my eye. And I'm still looking at this red ring and this white ring and this red flashing light. And he starts telling me what's happening. And as he starts doing this procedure, he's counting down and from 50 and 45. And he says things will get blurrier and the white light becomes more white and more blurry. And the red light I can barely see. And now it's kind of darkness and white and red. And then he says laser. And you can hear like beep, 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 beep. You can hear this little noise of the laser. And he's counting down 25 and 20 and 50. And he's saying, Father, great job, you're doing well. And at one point, I look to the side and he said, no, Father, look forward. Look at the red light. And so things get brighter and brighter and brighter. And eventually I'm only looking at this. All I see is pure white with a little bit of darkness, this tint of red. And then in a second, I saw perfectly. It was like a light switch went on and I could see everything perfectly. And they did the exact same thing on the next eye. 5.5, 7.2, 2.2. Do you feel that? Yes. Eye drops. Do you feel that? Yes. More eye drops to the ring, to the red, to blurry, 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 just white. And then again, perfect vision. And I got up and I stood there and the lady said, can you see me? I said, yeah. It's like I'm wearing my contacts. I can see you perfectly. And it was very dark in the room. They brought me into the next room and it's very dark in there. My eyes are very sensitive to the light. And I'm having my eyes closed, and The lady's now rambling off all my prescriptions they gave me for eye drops. She says, Father, you have a white cap. The white cap you use 6 to 8 times a day. You've got the gray cap. Take that 4 times a day, breakfast, lunch, dinner, and evening. You've got the pills. If you have any pain, take the pills. And she's rambling. I'm like, oh, ma'am, is this written down? She said, yes, it's all in writing. I said, great, because I missed everything you said. The doctor then came in and opened my eyes to inspect them with this bright light. It was very difficult to see with the light. And he said, great, everything looks amazing. We'll see you tomorrow. And so the next 2.5 hours, I was very, very sensitive to the light. Like even in the car, I had sunglasses on they gave me, and I was like holding my jacket over my eyes while my friend drove me because the light was so potent. I could barely look at it. I couldn't keep my eyes open for more than a half a second. And that lasted for about 2.5 hours, and then I was fine. I went to dinner that night with a friend. And there's something very incredible about it, something very biblical, something very prayerful about the whole experience, because there was that moment where everything was blurry. I could barely see anything, and then boom, like perfection. And when everything became clear, I was now like almost like afraid of the light, the brightness. And we kind of know this when we live in darkness for so long, when we live in sin, right? We can be afraid of God. We can be afraid of His glory. We can be afraid of even going to Him. We can be afraid of things like the confessional. Like, I'm afraid of that potency of the Son of God. And the real crux of the entire event was about that 2-minute window when I thought I'm going to leave. There's that moment where fear almost took over, when my mind was taking over and I was thinking, fight or flight, do I stay or do I go? And we all know this is where fear lives. Right? A person who's afraid of the dark, we all know this as children. You walk up, the room is dark, you don't just hang out there. No, you run. Like, I'm getting out of the darkness, I'm afraid of this. Or if you're afraid, if you have arachnophobia and you're afraid of spiders, you don't sit there and look at the thing. No, you run away as fast as you can. If you're afraid of small spaces and you're in the elevator, you're looking at the numbers, 7, 8, 9, we're at 9, I want to get out, and you get out of the elevator. If you're afraid of crowds, you try to stay away, you run. And we do this not with just our fears, we do this with all suffering and all pain. When we get to a place of difficulty, what do we want to do? We want to run. And so when our marriage is struggling, we think, fight or flight. Do I stay here or do I run? Do I go? When things get difficult in our family issues, we think, this person in my family, they've just been hurting me so much. Do I stay here or do I go? Do I break off this relationship or this friendship? So when we get into the fear, when we get into pain, when we get to suffering, we think about running. What does Jesus say today? When the Greeks come, what happens? 3 things happen in the scripture. People seek Jesus. He then says, if you want to seek me, you have to die. Unless a grain of wheat falls to the ground, it will never produce fruit. It will just remain a grain of wheat. And whoever loves his life and clings to it will die. But if you give up your life, then you will truly live. He is sought. They seek him. He says, you must die. And he says, you know, I'll go first. I'm going to die. That's where you can find me, up on a cross. And so meet me there if you truly want to follow me. They seek him. He says, die. And he dies. Follow me. And so in our fear, in our pain, in our suffering, we are not called to run. We are called to die there with Christ. And how do we do this? And so I just want to share a very brief story to maybe bring this into deeper perspective. The story comes from a priest that I know. He shared this story. And there is a guy he knew who was from China. About 10 years ago this happened. And in China, there's like 2 Catholic churches, essentially. There's the real Catholic Church, which our Pope appoints priests and bishops. But the government is not a big fan of that because it's communist. They don't like someone else having power. And so the real Catholic Church is underground. The priests are not known. They're hidden. They celebrate Mass in private. And then there's this government Catholic Church where the government technically claims to appoint bishops and priests. And they claim to ordain these men. And those are the public places of worship. So this false church and the real church, and even when I was in seminary, we had a seminarian from China, and he talked about this. He said, currently in the China, he said, where I'm from, when I was studying there, I had to study in a secret seminary, underground. No one knew. He's like, that's the reality in China. And so there was this man 10 years ago who lived in this city of Luzhang. And in this part of China, there's a fake church and a real church. And so his home, he would host, the priest would come in, private, clandestine, secret masses. And so 3 a.m. one evening, they're celebrating mass with the priest, his family, friends, and neighbors. And whenever they celebrate mass in secret, there's always somebody on guard to see if the authorities are coming. And so the man was waiting on guard, and right near the end of mass, the guy who's on guard, on watch, ran in and said, the police are coming. The police are coming, we have to pack up everyone, get out. The police are coming. And so they packed up the mass, they put everything in bags, the priest ran away, the neighborhood went scattered, all of his friends, even his family left, just the man stayed in the home. And so the authorities came and they said, you celebrated mass here. And they said, where is the priest? And they said, we want to know who the priest is. And he said, I will not tell you who the priest is. I will not give you his name. And so they arrested this man. They took him in for interrogation. And they said, you have to tell us who the priest is. We will confine you until you tell us his name. Just tell us who it was, and we will release you. He said, I will never tell you. Because he knew if I sell out the priest, these people will never have the Eucharist. They will never have Mass. They will never have confession. They will not be able to have salvation. And so they said, if you do not tell us, we will force you to tell us. And so that's what they tried. They tied him up. They stripped him of his clothes. They beat him. They abused him. They cut him up many places. They took fire, burned parts of his body. And they kept torturing him. And they would say, if you just tell us the name of the priest, we will release you. We will let you go. And as he's tortured, beat upon, and cut up, and set on fire, he said, no, I will not tell you who the priest is. I will not tell you his name. And so they continued. They even got a cattle prod that's got electricity. And they tried to torture him by electrocuting him. And as they ramped up the voltage, he still said, I will never give you the name. After doing this for quite some time, they realized he's never going to give in. So they eventually released him. He went back home. He was like a living martyr for that priest and for the faith. He eventually was able to escape this part of China and came to America. He lives here today. He is like a living martyr for the faith, for the Eucharist, for that priest, for the church. And he recognized how beautiful it is that here in our country, we can practice the faith whenever we want. We can go to a church anytime. And he recognized, oh my gosh, I can take my family to Mass every day. So he started doing that. Him and his family would walk to church, and they would go to daily Mass every day. And he said, what a gift it is that in this country, I can practice my faith freely. He also recognized, now leaving China, where he's oppressed, and now he's in the U.S., he discovered very quickly that if you work very hard, you can make money. And he said, I'm going to work so hard and make a better life for my children. I'm going to work for them so they can have a better life. And so he did. He started working more and more and more and making money so his family could have a better life. And he started recognizing the more I work, the more money I make. So he started going in early to work. And he started saying, you know, I have to make more money for my family, give my kids a better life. So I can't really make it to daily Mass, even though I was going. I'll stop going, it's fine, I'm still going on Sunday. And so he gave that up, started working more. He discovered the more he worked, the more money he could make and maybe provide a better life for his for the kids, give them a better future. And so the office said, if you come in on Sunday once in a while, we can pay you more, work overtime. So he started sacrificing, he started saying, fine, I'll give up Sunday once in a while so my kids can have this better future. And so he started not going on Sunday every so often. And then just a couple years ago, he started going just on Christmas and Easter. And then last year, he didn't even go on Easter. He stopped going to Mass altogether. And when the priest shared this story, he said, what we can't miss here, which is most important, is that what communist China with torture couldn't do by beating him, tying him up, using fire and cutting him and torturing him with electricity, what they couldn't do, our culture did very quickly, and it took no time and it went unnoticed. What torture couldn't do, this culture did quickly. And you see, because the biggest trick of the devil is to make us think that God just understands, that he's okay with it. Right? Oh, I've got to work on that Sunday. God understands. Or, oh, we've got basketball practice and my kids are in ballet. God understands. We have to go to that. And the reality is God doesn't understand. It boggles him. He says, right, seek me. You must die. I will go first. So he goes and he says, I will die for you. I give up everything. I sacrifice my very life so you can have life. I give you everything. And so when you do not give me everything in return, I don't understand. I'm dying up here for you. Won't you follow me? Won't you join me? Please. He's begging us. And so we cannot let our fear control us. We cannot be afraid to suffer. We cannot be afraid to at times encounter pains. We can't be afraid to give some things up. Maybe it will be difficult to not work that extra time and have to depend more on God to provide for my kids or provide for my home. Maybe it will be difficult to say, I got to take my kids out of some programs. But okay, how much more is eternal life worth it than a sport or an activity? You know, at the end of the day, did I even pray? Did I give up time for God? So don't let the devil convince you that God understands. He doesn't. He's on the cross dying. And never let the devil convince you that we can just sit here and wait and become saints. No. If we sit and just be here existing, we will never grow. And so today is the day. Do not be afraid. Every day to ask the question right now, what things do I need to give up in order to truly be a Christian, to be a Catholic? What things do I need to give up, to sacrifice, to die today, to actually rise with Jesus Christ? And that's what we meditate on today. As we receive this God incarnate, he gave us everything. Will we give him everything in return? So I encourage each one of us to ask this question every day. Did I die for him? Maybe put it on a little sticky note and put it on your bathroom mirror so you can see it every night before bed. And ask that question. Did I die for him? Because he died for me. He gave me everything. Will I give him everything in return?